Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Broadcasting live from the beautiful Edgewood Country Club in Rivervale, New Jersey. Hello, New York. How's everybody? I'm Geraldo Nomladen. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, thank you.
So what about that DNA they found in that hunting lodge upstate? Is that for real, or is that another one like the one in the western tier of New York, or, Philadelphia, or on Mars, these two escapees? Is this legit?
Well, you asked an excellent question. Right in the past, it's been sightings, and none of those sightings have turned out to be anything. This time, CBS News is reporting this, that there is a DNA match from one of the cabins that was broken into in the last 24 hours. So if you go by what CBS says, and a reputable source, saying that, yes, there may be a connection to at least one of the two that are missing.
Do you have more details on where they got the DNA? It is kind of surprising that they could turn it around in, so breathtakingly fast.
I can't detail it for you, but I can guess these people, if it was one or both of them, both inside this cabin, were rummaging through for food, anything they could find. And so easy enough, if that's the case, to find a DNA match.
You know, we'll see. Okay, we'll see. It's gorgeous here. It's gorgeous here, and I hope that, next year maybe we'll get an even bigger turnout. We are sold out, though. Sold out. All 36 foursomes sold out. A lot of money going to Life's Work, the same charity that we raised the money for Celebrity Apprentice, the Family Center for Autism. So I'm delighted. This time we're honoring a fellow named Steven Santino from People's United Bank out on Long Island. You know, I was in Charleston, South Carolina, as I hope you know. We did the program from there live on Friday. It was on Thursday, rather. It was a kind of, no, Friday. Friday. It was an emotional experience for me getting there hours after the discovery of the mass murder in the Mother Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopalian Church there in historic Charleston, South Carolina. The thing that struck me then, it was my angle Thursday night and Friday morning, and has stayed true, is how united the people of Charleston, South Carolina, and the region have been, black and white together. It is amazingly heartwarming to see how there was none of the outrage and outrageous behavior that followed the rage, like in Baltimore or in Ferguson, Missouri, and Charleston, South Carolina. There was nothing but love and peace and horror at this horrible crime that happened, perpetrated by this racist punk, this racist Judas, this man who inculcated himself with that prayer group on Wednesday night. And then after an hour, spending an hour looking in the eyes of the people that were praying and pretending to be interested in their Bible studies, opening up with his 45 caliber Glock, massacring nine of them, pumping repeated rounds into their lifeless bodies. And then we come to find out allegedly that he thought he saved the bullet for himself, and then realized he had exhausted all of his ammunition in killing people. And then he went on that half-assed flight and was caught shortly afterwards, I think 13, 14 hours later, in Shelby, North Carolina, by local cops. Now he's charged with 9 counts of murder, 1 weapons count, and everybody is weighing in now. You have politicians of all stripes. There's a lot of different debates going on. I'll get to the flag and get to your calls momentarily. But the President of the United States, he weighed in. He put himself into this debate as well he should have. I totally, sometimes he steps where he shouldn't. But this time, as the first black president, as indeed as the president of the United States, it was his duty to speak out. What was shocking was the frankness of the language that the president of the United States used, giving an interview to a popular podcast Before we talk about, you know, the podcast and the circumstance, I'd like you to listen to what the President of the United States said in this debate over race and guns, all pegged, obviously, to the violence in Charleston, South Carolina. Here's the president.
This horrible thing happens Wednesday, and you know, you have, you know, these police actions in Baltimore and Ferguson. I mean, Where, you know, coming from where you came from.
Right.
And you know, trying to define yourself in terms of the African American community, right, and in terms of racial relations, where are we with that in terms of when you came in your mind?
Well, first of all, I always tell young people in particular, do not say that nothing's changed when it comes to race in America, unless you lived through being a black man in the 1950s. Or 60s, mm-hmm, or 70s. It is incontrovertible that race relations have improved significantly during my lifetime and yours, and that opportunities have opened up, and that attitudes have changed.
Yeah.
That is a fact. What is also true is that the legacy of slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination in almost every institution of our lives, you know, that casts a long shadow, and that's still part of our DNA. That's passed on. We're not cured of it.
Racism.
We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not just a matter of it not being polite to say nigger in public. That's not the measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior. And so what I tried to describe in the Selma speech that I gave commemorating the march there was, again, a notion that progress is real and we have to take hope from that progress. But what is also real is that the march isn't over, and the work is not yet completed.
All right, so a lot of things I want to talk about now. First of all, should our first black president have used the N-word? Is that the example that he needed to set? That's one point. Or was it absolutely necessary to get our attention? You know, it certainly got mine. And the other point I have to bring out, so that's one debate. Should the president have used the N-word, or should it be forever barred in you know, civilized society? Or, you know, the other important thing I want to talk about is the Confederate flag. And I know that, having spent so much time in and around, you know, I've been in every state, I've covered stories everywhere, no more than Charleston, South Carolina, for goodness sake, I know that many good, brave people, including millions and millions who had no connection to slavery, fought and died for the Confederacy. I mean, there's a real collective memory down there, along with states' rights. It's the memory of the innocent fallen, the brave, innocent fallen, nostalgia for the traditions and the tempo of the antebellum South, you know, the plantations and, you know, the weeping willow trees, the fiddling, the moon. There's just a lot. The cotton. There's a lot of nostalgia, and the traditions and that tempo of the Old South is cited as the rationale for flying the battle flag of the Confederacy. The good, brave soldiers, nothing to do with slavery, who died fighting for the South. But I was thinking over the weekend, what do you think about this? Many good, brave Germans, including those who had no connection to the Holocaust or were even members of the Nazi Party, died fighting for the German army, right? Millions of them, young, old, farmers, tradesmen, students from the four corners of Germany, fought and died honorably, never having had anything to do with the hateful Hitlerian regime. Yet there's no mainstream sentiment in Germany. There's no movement among anybody but the hardcore anti-Semites to display the swastika or the other hateful symbols of the Nazi regime, right? there's an understanding in Germany and throughout the civilized world that those symbols associated with such hurt and abuse are obnoxious to many, many people. Is there, ladies and gentlemen, really that much of a difference? Wasn't slavery also a grotesque crime against humanity? Whether you had slaves or not, slavery was the law of the South. It was the law of South Carolina, the state where the Civil War started. They have the slave pens preserved as tourist attractions in downtown Charleston. Slavery. Nazis. Slavery. Is it really that big a difference? Isn't it time to put the Confederate battle flag, the one that was not even lowered to half staff, when 9 innocent, wonderful black people were slain in a house of worship, wasn't even lowered then? Isn't it time to put the stars and bars in the museum?
The headlines, the city's most pressing issues, Geraldo, today and every day, 77 WABC.
So I have two things on my mind. One is, should the president, our first black president, have used the N-word? I know the president does not like it when he hears it in hip-hop lyrics and so forth, but he used it, and he used it to dramatic effect. Was that the right thing to do? The other question I have is, what's the difference, really, between the swastika and the battle flag of the Confederacy? Aren't they both, given the fact that good people were associated with both Germany in World War I and II, especially World War II, and with the antebellum South, the Confederacy, good people associated with both, let's be honest. Everybody in Germany wasn't Nazis. They didn't all participate in the Holocaust. Everybody in the South did not own slaves. They weren't cruel people. They weren't white supremacists. And yet the symbol of Nazism, the swastika, banned everywhere by civilized people. I mean, it doesn't fly over any building. It doesn't fly over even a war memorial for the slain German soldiers. Should the battle flag of the Confederacy really fly over the State House or over the war memorial in front of the State House in Charleston, South Carolina, and elsewhere throughout the South? You know, in Confederate license plates and so forth? Is that the right thing? So I'll take calls on either one. You go the president or the Confederate battle flag. We'll start with, Marshall in Edison, New Jersey? Hey, Marshall, what's on your mind, buddy?
Yeah, how are you doing, Geraldo? I just had a couple of objections to even bringing up the issue of use of the word, the N-word, by the president. I think it's kind of a non-issue because I think all he was doing is bringing up the contrast between open racism and just racism that's not as obvious, you know, or that's not as outright. So I kind of feel that was one point.
Would you ever use it to make that same point in that same context?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm a white person, so I think I'd be I'd be a little more reluctant to use it. But I think the point is well made in the sense of, you know, the fact that,
when I was a kid, they used it all the time. I mean, I used it.
Well,
myself.
It's not a matter of kids using it. I don't think you got to look at the context that he used it in. It wasn't in terms of, you know, kind of.
All right, so you cut the president slack because of context. Okay, now what's your
absolutely.
Second point?
The other point was you were saying, I agree with your point about the flag and German use of the swastika today. I guess my objection to your second point was, you know, when you said the soldiers are honorable, I don't think they're honorable at all because they know exactly what the Nazi regime was doing. And
you think every German soldier knew that we pretended in the United States we didn't know, and we, you know, I'm sure that President Roosevelt knew.
Well, I'm not even talking about, you know, what happened in the concentration camps. I'm just talking about, you know, the hatred speeches and the, you know, the imperialistic nature of what was going on.
So you think that slavery was not as bad as Nazism?
Oh, no, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm not saying that at all.
I think the symbols of one are just as bad as the symbols of the other. Anyway, excellent call, Marshall. You sound like a smart guy.
Totally agree with your point. I
got to move on, buddy, but I very thoughtful call, and I appreciate it. Don't be a stranger. Okay, let's go to in Long Island City. Let's go to George. Hey, George, what are you thinking about?
I think you're wrong about the Nazi flag and the battle flag, the Confederate battle flag, because of number one, the Nazi flag represented the government that systematically took one segment of the population just because of their religion, enslaved them, and then murdered them.
All right, full stop, full stop. Wait, hold on, full stop. Here you have a government, the government of the Confederate States of America, that systematically enslaved 4 million black people just because they were black people.
But guess what? Slavery was all over the United States. And then start to dissipate from the north down to the south, and the north wanted to get their way. But the whole thing is, did the southern states, okay, the Confederacy, systematically go out and kill slaves, all of them? No, that wasn't part of their policy, but it was in Germany.
Well, what, let me ask you this, because you sound like a smart guy. I get your distinction, but I want you to answer the question. Was or was not slavery a grotesque crime against humanity? Granted, it wasn't as bad as the
2015 context, yes. Go back 150, 60, 200 years. You had slavery here in New York, all over the United States, and it wasn't looked upon it that way in those times. You have to take...
We're talking about flying the battle flag now. Now, in this context, do you want that battle flag flying or not?
Well, that's not me. I'm in New York. I couldn't care less what they fly.
Okay? Really? You
would
really don't? What if they were flying a swastika?
No. You can't do a swastika over in Europe. It's against the law.
Well, it should be against the, you don't think it should be against the law to fly the Confederate battle flag over the Capitol?
You tell me why.
Why? Because every black person that looks at it thinks that it's remembering the days of white supremacy, Jim Crow, and slavery. That's why.
Okay, so let me ask
you. Why? Okay, so. It's not a okay, so. It's a big deal. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's not a big deal to you? Well, that's
then you're
selective in your outrage. All right, George, you're selective in your outrage. Excuse me. I'm tired now. I've listened to the argument, and it wasn't like my big issue. But to stand in front of that damn church, to stand in front of that church and remember nine people, the best people, the Bible studying people, the law abiding, hard working, faithful people that got slaughtered by someone inspired by these hateful symbols. It's time. Get rid of it.
Where New York comes to talk.
Caught my attention, the President of the United States using the N-word on television in a podcast. Was it the right thing to do? Also, the battle flag of the Confederacy, is it really that different from the swastika of the Nazi regime? In both cases, many good, brave people died fighting for hateful regimes, or in the case of slavery, a grotesque crime against humanity. Isn't it time for the Stars and Bars to be relegated to a museum? Before I get back to your calls at 866-HERALDO, and I appreciate them, we are broadcasting live from the beautiful Edgewood Country Club in Rivervale, New Jersey. We're having our 28th annual Geraldo Rivera Golf Classic. We are doing this as a benefit. It is all sold out, a benefit for Life's Work and the Family Center for Autism, located in Nassau County on Long Island. Right now, New York City Council member Andy King joins us. The council person held a prayer vigil and a march on Saturday in solidarity with those in Charleston. Now, Councilman, did the march already take place, or is it for next Saturday?
Good morning again, and thank you, Geraldo. No, the march did take place Saturday late afternoon around 4:30. A number of community residents, children, youth, adults and seniors. We marched down from one section of the district down on one of our main corridors, East Gun Hill Road, and stopped at the hub of the district, East Gun Hill Road and White Plains Road.
Oh, so you're up in the Bronx. So how well was it attended, Councilman?
It was very well attended. If anybody didn't go to my Facebook page, and you can see over 100 folks that we have participating who marched down. I'm talking about the little ones from kindergarten, as well all the way to college graduates and our seniors in the neighborhood. And we had a number of pastors who joined us also, who led us in prayer and reflection.
So what do you think of this debate we're having right now? Do you think the that the battle flag of the Confederacy should still fly. You know, tell me how you feel about that. And first, I want you to start with the president using the N-word on TV.
Well, you know, I believe the N-word is part of the derogatory conversations that have suppressed the people, that have tore up people's self-esteem. And we're talking about black people. Let me not be confused on this one. That word was used to demean people. So I don't see how we can ever use it as a term of endearing. It's something that, as you just said, regards to the flag, I heard you listening, relegating it to history and putting it in a museum, but not letting it be our everyday existence today, because it does, in those same words and symbolism and the meaning of that word and that flag, it always reflects discrimination and prejudicial behavior and thinking.
So you think that the secret agenda flying that flag is to make black people remember when they were a subjugated race in the South?
I think it inspires those who think that way to think it's okay to behave in such a manner that's discriminatory and prejudicial. And I don't think it's, as far as a black person, you know, I drove down to South Pine and I was kind of taken back when I saw a flag hanging from one of the restaurants, big as giant as it could be. And I'm like, what year are we in? Where am I? You know, I went back in time, you know, and said, hold up, this can't actually be in the 2000s that we're looking at a Confederate flag high and people walking proud to support it. So there's something wrong with that thing, or anybody who thinks that type of behavior that comes from what that flag represents, that's a problem for those individuals as well as for all of us.
You know, it's interesting how so many good, polite people disagree, but I think maybe this act was so horrible. I just quickly, before I let you go, why no disturbances? Why just pure order and comedy and by that I mean friendship, respect, love, affection. Why that and not anger and violence like Ferguson and Baltimore?
You know, the sad thing about it is that, you know, in this moment, we've always been asked to have a kumbaya moment. Every time that something goes wrong, we don't want outrage. When there's something that's really racial, that causes a racial divide, we want to offer peace. We want to pray for the victim. We want to pray for the perpetrator. There comes a point in time that we need to hold individuals responsible for the behaviors and the actions that they create. And society says violence, you know, an eye for an eye shouldn't apply. Then if you don't want that ever to happen, then if someone like this young man who gracefully went out and killed the number of 9 black mothers, brothers, sisters, and husbands, then they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That's how you change the behavior. You don't have to worry about uprisings and fighting and all the time. The system needs to do what it's supposed to do to protect its citizens. And if the shoe was on the other foot, trust me, that gun, if that was a black man who went out killing white people, then I guarantee you he'd be thrown underneath the jail. He might not even made it out of the door. He might have got killed before he even got to the police station. So I'm saying we in government, those in law enforcement, those who are responsible for the system, got to say, hey, we've cried Black Lives Matter, and they want to turn it to All Lives Matter. All lives truly matter, but black lives are the ones that keep getting subjected to this type of violence perpetrated on them and their communities. So we got to hold people accountable who engage in this type of violent act and prosecute them to enforce the law to tell them that behavior is not acceptable. And any systems that perpetuate it, whether it's music, television, movies, or anything that's a symbolism of hate, then those individuals that engage need to be prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
All right, Councilmember Andy King, well said, brother. Thank you very much for coming on. All right, didn't mean to cut you off there. Here's Jason in New Jersey. Jason, what are you thinking about? Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing, Geraldo?
Pretty good.
I want to say that you can't look up to two different flags. I mean, the red, white, and blue stands for 50 states, the United States. You know, so if you have a flag that you're flying that represents partial, you know, that's not patriotic. I don't think that you could, you know, look up to both. And I think that it represents a dark time in U.S. history. So, you know.
It does.
And also,
you know, it does. I agree with you, man. And, you know, having Friday broadcast from Charleston, from your old radio station there, they had the same debate. And the tone of it, as you might expect, ladies and gentlemen, was so different. It was so defensive. And people saying, why are you going off on that? That's not the issue. This was a psycho. This was an aberrant you know, Charles Manson, this was a terrorist, on and on and on. Do you think that your former listeners will ever be convinced that those symbols of the Confederacy are obnoxious in today's day and age?
You know, maybe the younger generation, but I'll tell you what. When I first moved there, I remember a popular bumper sticker, because there was a lot of people moving to Charleston from the north, because it's just a beautiful place, as you saw. And there was a bumper sticker said, "I don't care how you did it up north." It was a very popular bumper sticker, and I think that holds true even today. That if I remember opening up the phone lines there and asking the exact same question you're asking today, and the blowback I got, that it's part of my history, it's part of my heritage, it's not racist to me, and that flag should fly, and that's the reason it's still flying today.
But, I mean, half the guys that sing country music, let's face it, you hear Toby Keith or any of these guys, the guy who was on The Celebrity Apprentice, who won the, who was that, the guy with the big hat that beat Penn Jillette? It wasn't about slavery, about states' rights. Yeah, it's always about something else.
Well, but, it's not called the Civil War, right? It's called the War of the States.
War between the states. All right. So what do you think, folks? I'm anxious to hear from you. Here's Gio in New York. What's up, Gio? Hello? You there?
Hello?
Hi, you're on, buddy. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking about that flag that flies over the capital of South Carolina.
Uh-huh. You got it. What about it?
I think it's about 100 years too late, 100 years late. It should have been down over 100 years ago. And to hear politicians make excuses like that man from Arkansas, well, I'm not concerned about it. And to hear politicians squirm to keep them saying it should be down. Any man in his right mind knows that that flag should be taken down. It's a symbol that says I should be a slave because I'm a black man. That's what I see when I look at it. Men, brave men, fall.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think that that is the real intent? That's the secret mojo motivating the fact that that flag flies so defiantly that you need a two-thirds vote in the state legislature to even dip it?
It shows you the level of the politician's intelligence, because it affects a great majority of the population.
And when you see it, your feeling?
When I see it, my feeling is that that symbolizes that I should be a slave. That if they had won, I would be a slave today. That's what I see.
Your great-grandchildren, absolutely. Oh, man. Sometimes it takes a horrible event to really motivate change. Sometimes it takes something so jarring. And that I still can't get over it. The image of that. I mean, the fact that he shot them all multiple times with a .45 at point-blank range after sitting alongside them, looking them in the eyes, reading the scriptures with them, and then announcing that he had to do it because black people were raping our women and taking over our country. I mean, 77 WABC 866 Geraldo, I appreciate your calls, and just be patient. I'm coming back to you right after.
77 WABC.
Welcome back, everybody. It is interesting. I wonder how this whole, not only the flag controversy, the Confederate flag controversy, but the bigger picture. Remember, I want to be very brutally frank with everybody and talk square the way I always talk to you. You know that I believe that the real important civil rights, specific civil rights issue of this era is black-on-black violence. I think that inner-city violence in Baltimore and elsewhere, even in our own five boroughs and surrounding areas, is what is the most egregious and raw and unrecognized issue affecting African Americans, urban African Americans today. I have said it before. This incident in Charleston does not change my feelings about that. That, I believe, as we approach the summer, we have to have marches for the 70 murdered in Baltimore since Freddie Gray. We have to have marches about that. We have to be as concerned about that as any other aspect of civil rights. Having said that, this incident in Charleston reveals something ugly, or reminds us of something desperately low down and dirty, and that is that traditional racism is alive and well and is a cancer on the land. That this young man
was not. I mean, yes, of course, he's an anomaly. People don't go out and murder people in churches, for God's sakes. And white young men, the KKK and all that, you know, most of that is part of history. But as the president said accurately, it is impossible to deny, A, the lingering effects from slavery and Jim Crow. It is impossible to deny that discrimination is another cancer on the land, that too many young black men are unemployed because they have systematic discrimination and bad education and failed families and all the rest of it. But we have to understand that this kid got this hateful look right now. For instance, he says, the kid says, the racist Judas says, the murderer, the mass murderer says, that he first learned of brutal black-on-white murders from the website of something called the Council of Conservative Citizens. Council of Conservative Citizens. It's a white supremacist group. That's what influenced this this roof fellow. Turns out that the Council of Conservative Citizens, who talks a lot about brutal black-on-white murders, which are really rare also, that Council of Concerned Citizens, Conservative Citizens, donated money to the political campaigns, the presidential campaigns of Ted Cruz, Rick Santorum, and Rand Paul. They gave Ted Cruz, the Council of Conservative Citizens, $8,500 in donations, which he returned as soon as he realized where they came from, or as soon as the news broke, the Guardian broke the news. But don't you think this will complicate Cruz's run, particularly? I don't know how much they gave to Santorum or Paul. We'll find out. We got to talk about those things, folks. We got to talk about that, too. Welcome back, everybody. It is a highly charged, emotional day. We're talking about what happened in Charleston, South Carolina, and the reaction to it. The debate is raging now over whether or not that battle flag of the Confederacy should still fly over the war memorial, the Civil War memorial on the grounds of the state capitol. It used to fly over the state capitol itself. It is everywhere, even in a progressive town like Charleston, South Carolina. But now, with the blood of those folks barely dry inside the historic Mother Emanuel AME Church, the burials, the funerals starting today, there is a lot of discussion over whether or not that symbol deserves any display in the modern era outside of a museum. And I ask, what's the difference really between that flag, that battle flag of the Confederacy, and the swastika of the Germans? Many brave, good Germans died in World War II. They had nothing to do with the Holocaust. That's the argument about the battle flag of the Confederacy. All the good, brave people had nothing to do with slavery. They were fighting for states' rights or one thing or another, not to preserve slavery. A lot of Germans were fighting not for the Holocaust, but fighting for whatever their nationalistic perverse reasons were. And yet the swastika banned, the battle flag of the Confederacy still proudly flying 150 years or more later. Isn't it time to dump it? That, the president using the N-word, a lot of things going on, race, obviously, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, the most glaring domestic issue, the biggest gap, the biggest problem, worse than infrastructure or any of these public education, although that certainly is part of the big picture. Lisa Durden is a very prominent commentator on black culture. She's a member of the National Black Programming Consortium. She has various programs on different media. She joins us now. Hi, Lisa.
Geraldo, I'm your biggest fan, and I'm on your show. Oh, my God. Hi, Geraldo.
Well, I like that. I like that. I like that spirit. I like that a lot. So tell me, what do you think about, first of all, the president using the N-word? Was it appropriate?
This is a huge debate. First of all, white people, stay out of our business. White people are tasting that word. They can't stand it when we use that word. Now, there are blacks who don't like the word. So, I'm calling black people a nigger. However, we all know in our culture that we use the word nigger.
We got it. You made your point. We got it.
It's a word. But I think that the fixation reaction of the white media and white people on, well, you know, Barack Obama used it and Jay-Z used it, so why can't we? That's an issue. When you taste a word in your mouth that you know is a bad word, why is it that that taste feels good to you? So I question white people who want to know why we use that word. Why do you want to know, white people? Why do y'all want to know?
Well, I don't like it. I don't like it when anyone uses it. But all right, let me leave that aside. That's too complex. I get you. You made the point. You made that point very, very well. You made it in a very poetic, circular way, but you got to it, and I appreciate it. But what about, you know, how do you feel when you see the stars and bars? How do you feel when you see the battle flag of the Confederacy?
When I see that flag, it really makes my brain bleed, Geraldo. And, you know, to back to race again, I understand what happened in with the swastika and all of those things that happened with Hitler. However, at this moment in time, we're talking about what happened on American soil right now in South Carolina, and the Confederate flag is still waving at the state's capital. Every single time, Geraldo, that something happens to African Americans, they want to start comparing what happened to white people. Can we please just focus on what has happened today with the massacre in South Carolina and not bleed them into each other and overlap them? Let that be for another day, and call Lisa Durden for the show because I can discuss that as well. But right now the issue is that Confederate flag that needs to come down and be buried. And I really can't stand the fact that people keep saying, you know, but it's our culture. We're used to being up. I understand that you were used to slavery too, but we had to end that as well. So, I mean, we can be used to a lot of things that are not good for us.
What about Dylann Roof? When you analyze his motivation, what do you see? What do you think?
First of all, Geraldo, I wrote a post on Lisa Durden, myworldmyway.com, my blog. If you want to read more about what I think, get on that. Lisa Durden, myworldmyway.com. I wrote, stop it. Stop it, white racist media. Dylann Roof ain't crazy. He's a monster. And once again, the white media wants to soften what this monster has done. They're calling him everything other than what he is, which is a beast and a monster. And this dude had the nerve to say, as he was shooting people to death at this church, you're raping our women and taking over our country? You have to go? Obviously, this 21-year-old is a thug. And he must have come from a skinhead household, because the hatred this guy had is so deep. It could not have only come from outside forces. It was indoctrinated into this guy. And he's gotten it very confused. He must be going from the KKK history book, because he's twisted everything. No, boo-boo, your forefathers who were slave masters raped my mothers and my grandmothers. No, boo-boo, your fathers, forefathers robbed this country of the Native Americans. You guys are immigrants. Get that straight. Don't twist it. So he was really confused. And I think that the planning of something for 6 months means you're not crazy. You're a beast. You're a monster. You massacred people.
I agree. He's a wannabe Charles Manson, a racist Judas. Yes. And you are amazingly impassioned and articulate, and I like you, Lisa.
Well, thank you. And, you know, it hit home personally, because one of my personal friends, Reverend Clementa Pickney, who went to Bellsburg High School in Newark, you know, when I saw her picture, and I said, wait a minute, wait, didn't we go to Bellsburg High School together? And I literally sunk. You know, you have that feeling in your throat, Geraldo, where you feel this burning and you can't stop the crying.
Yikes.
Your heart gets heavy. My body fell apart when I knew someone personally, all of the victims I felt sorry for, but to be able to connect to it on a personal level was even worse. This guy needs to be in a jail cell with a needle in his arm waiting to die in prison. And don't get me wrong, I don't mind due process. I respect due process, but they better speed this sucker up to make sure they fast forward him quickly. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Right to the gas chamber. Right away.
All right, Lisa Durden, I appreciate you coming on, really.
Well,
excellent.
Thank you so much for having me. Geraldo, I love you.
We'll have you back. Same here. So, Noam, did you know he went to high school in Newark?
I did. No, he didn't go. I think she got it incorrect. One of the women who was killed went to high school in Newark.
I get you. Terry in New York, what's on your mind, Terry?
Yes. Hey, Geraldo. You know, throughout the generations, through the 1920s, the Klan revival, the 60s, everybody who was against inclusion in the South would wrap themselves around that flag. That flag is a sign of treason. That flag cost, you know, 400 Union lives. You know, it turned into the Stars and Bars probably about 1864. But Geraldo, that flag has no business being state sponsored. You want to see it on trucks going down the highway. You want to see it on private property, but not state sponsored. It's a terrible insult. It's 300 years of oppression.
All right, I'm with you, Terry. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Steve. Steve, also in New York. What are you thinking about, Steve? Thank you for calling.
Hi, Geraldo. I was talking about to your screener about your analogy between the Nazi flag and the Southern flag. By the way, which was the battle flag, it's not the Stars and Bars. The Stars and Bars was the national flag, which is a little different. The point I wanted to make is that slavery was an institution that every civilization on the planet has practiced at some time. Nazism is an historical aberration. So
I disagree. I totally disagree. Don't they say Genghis Khan killed 40 million? Didn't he wipe out half the population of Europe? Wasn't that genocide? Yeah, didn't the Turks wipe out the Armenians or try to? Wasn't that genocide?
Well, there's a slight difference if you want to get into historical perspective.
I don't want to argue the nuances, but can you agree that they're both grotesque crimes against humanity, slavery and Nazism?
I think slavery in general is a grotesque crime against humanity, but it's not singular to just blacks or Africans. It was practiced. Every single culture has practiced slavery.
I agree with that. The Romans certainly built their empire on it.
Right. And I don't think the battle flag should be flown in any official capacity because it represents rebellion. It represents treason against the United States.
Do you think they fly it to defy the United States government, or do you think they fly it to remind black people of all of the what comes with the Confederate States?
I think you have to look at it slightly in historical context because the South suffered so badly under Reconstruction that I think the use of the battle flag in various official symbols was a form of passive-aggressive attitude toward the federal government.
Wasn't it embraced by the KKK and the other hate-mongering groups?
Well, yeah, sure, they're hate-mongers, but I think also that in the official capacity, the KKK is not official by any stroke of the imagination, but I think the adoption of the battle flag by various states in the South was a form of passive-aggressive resistance to the federal government based upon their experience of Reconstruction.
But do you think, I mean, Reconstruction's been a while, right, Steve?
Yeah, but that's what I said.
I got news for you. It's the 2015 now.
But that's what I said. I don't think the battle flag should be flown in an official capacity if people want to use it as...
Well, what do you think they're flying it for now? That's my question. Why do you think the legislature in South Carolina believes that you need a supermajority to even dip the flag in times of tragedy?
Well, you know, first of all, those are old laws. Second of all, it goes back to the whole notion of the lost cause, which Jefferson Davis was a big proponent of. But the notion of the lost cause was something that came about after the Civil War for those who were in rebellion, Jefferson Davis and others, to use as a sort of justification. So I think these are all historical holdovers. Basically, I don't think they really think about it now in terms of a representation of slavery. I think this whole notion of the lost cause has become such an undercurrent in Southern thought that I don't think they think about it that.
You don't think they have that has a racial connotation at all?
No,
honestly,
I don't.
Oh, I think you're naive, brother. But I appreciate the call. Very smart. Let's go to Anthony. I'm sorry, Anthony, you've been holding so long. What's up? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, Geraldo, what about when you see the speaker's podium at the Senate in Washington, D.C., you see two symbols of fascism. I get offended by that because my cousin, during World War II, was killed by the fascists, and I have to be reminded constantly of those two symbols that are there, and it was also on the Mercury dime, the symbol of the fascism. It's the bundle of sticks with the hatchet.
Yeah, I know what it is, yeah. But yeah. I don't get your point. What's your point?
I'm offended by that, and I'm saying that I'm offended by that also.
So you're saying that the Confederate flag's okay?
No, I'm not saying the Confederate flag was okay. That was used because they seceded from the North. That's all it was. It wasn't about slavery.
Well, they seceded from the North because they wanted, they didn't want to give up their slaves. Wasn't that the main reason they fought? Certainly the high rollers in the South, that was why they fought, to preserve the institution of slavery.
Why do they have those fascists in the Senate at the Speaker's podium? Why? That's a symbol of fascism. Get rid of those.
And you think that, you know, many people right now listening right this second are offended by the fasci? I mean, the...
Yeah, they were. I am, because I had cousins and I had relatives that were killed by the fascists in Italy and everything.
All right, Anthony, I think that in terms of emotional jolt, you have to agree with me that the fasci symbol doesn't compete with the Nazi swastika. Or the Confederate battle flag, for that matter.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
26 minutes after 11 o'clock. It's been an active morning. And particularly, you should see the scene here at the lovely Edgewood Country Club in Rivervale, New Jersey, where we are broadcasting live here on 77 WABC. You know, this radio station does a lot for great causes, and this is a fabulous cause. Obviously, I'm prejudiced. Life's Work is an organization I've been involved with since the very beginning, in the days after Willowbrook, more than 40 years ago. It is amazing. My entire adult life, I've known these people. They've done such good work. It was formed by the parents of the children, Vicky Schneps, and the other parents of children children with various disabilities inside the awful Willowbrook Institution and other institutions similar, like Letchworth Village in Rockland County. And now it is so evolved. The whole situation has evolved. The institutions are closed now. The small community-based residences are the way people with the developmental disabilities are cared for. Now with autism raging, this epidemic, another kind of developmental disability, Life's Work has taken on that challenge. They've opened their Family Center for Autism. You should see it. It is fantastic. What's the town? Right in Garden City. We toured it. Fabulous. Right across from the county center there. It's opened, and the money is going there. This year, our big golf tournament here at the Edgewood Country Club, honoring Stephen Santino from People's United Bank. He's done a great job. All the foursomes oversold. Lots of people here. I want to also thank Leslie Slender, our promotions director here at WABC. She's done a fantastic job. I wish you were all here. I wish you were all here. Next year, if you have a chance, come on down. Right now, we're having this big debate. I believe that the Confederate battle flag, when you think about it, deep down, when you think about it, when you're honest, you know, is it about nostalgia or is it about... And really, does it really matter that one person's nostalgia is another person's... A hateful memory. It is, black people and white people and people of various ideologies and philosophies see symbols differently. I'm sure that some like the swastika because it reminds them of something, aside from the, you can't say aside from, but it's not the Holocaust they think of. It's Nazi symbolism, the army, and it was a good army with good equipment and cool graphics, But the swastika is banned now, and is banned to fly in public spaces for a good reason, because it is a grotesque. It is a symbol of a grotesque time in human history, and a lot of people believe that the Confederate battle flag is also. A symbol of a grotesque crime against humanity and has no place, certainly no place in a public building, for goodness sake, if you want to fly it in your backyard as this creepy murdering kid did down in Charleston, South Carolina. I guess that's your right. You could have a swastika, unless it's illegal in your country. Is it really appropriate to fly over the war memorial in the state capital of South Carolina? I don't think that argument really holds much water now in the light of the 9 slaughtered innocent people in the basement of the Mother Emanuel AME Church. Is Michael in Connecticut? Hey, Michael, what's up, man?
Hi, Geraldo. I had a few few words on the origins and the usage in the past of those two respective now infamous banners. And if we could start with the Stars and Bars or the Confederate battle flag.
You know, Michael, I tell you what, I don't want to give you a short shrift. It sounds like you're a smart man with a point to make. Can you hold on? And
sure.
We'll come to you right after the break. We're going to break for news. You hold on, Michael. We're going to come back to you and to others, and I appreciate that the lines are filled. 866-ARELDO is the number.
Broadcasting live from the Edgewood Country Club in Rivervale, New Jersey. You know, Noam, it was funny when Bill Evans said it was going to real feel 100, but it's like, that's dry heat, right? We always just say that in Tucson at the University of Arizona. Well, that's dry heat.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to be dry heat tomorrow. So.
The President of the United States, in a surprisingly revealing, very emotional, very personal interview he gave to a podcast, of all things, talking about the use of the N-word, which I will not say. I just don't think it's very useful. I don't like it when anyone says it. I don't like it when JC says it. I don't like it when anyone says it. Really talked about racism in this country in a way that I thought was very honest. You know, the race, it's not just about racism. It's about the racial divide in this country. It is bigger than the Grand Canyon, the most deep and unresolved issue in the country. And I think that flying the Confederate flag just exacerbates the division. We were talking to a very smart man in Connecticut by the name of Michael before the commercial break, and I promised him that he could make 2 points about the origin, the context of the battle flag, and Michael rejoins us. Thanks for your patience, brother. Okay, now give us these two quick points. Go ahead.
Okay, Araldo, thank you. The St. Andrew's Cross is the diagonal pattern that is employed in the so-called Confederate battle flag. The St. Andrew's Cross can be found twice in the British national flag, known as the Union Jack. Those two diagonals are the representative of Scotland and Ireland, which were once claimed exclusively by the British Empire. Also, the Russian flag, the old imperial flag, had a diagonal cross in it. St. Andrew, by the way, didn't want to be crucified in the conventional way, so he humbled himself and was crucified diagonally. That's the basis of that symbol. And finally, it's a universal emblem in code flags for the letter M, which is my initial two.
Okay, what's the point here, Michael? That it has some,
symbolism,
that the battle flag or the Confederate flag?
Yes, symbolism's power always exceeds the particular usage of a thing. And all of your callers are correct in the sense that they're picking on the point about the hatred and the total negativity of the emblems. But on the flip side, some people go over for the noble side of it. And when it came to the swastika, Hitler was very proud of personally rigging that design, which traditionally had been an emblem of peace and stability among Buddhists and North American Indians and so on. And he tilted it and made it infamous for all time. So, Geraldo, the idea of illiteracy when it comes to words and letters is one thing which we try to recover from, but visual illiteracy is another problem, especially when people have a covert purpose for the use of symbols. And I thank you for taking the time to listen.
All right. So, like I said, smart man, we got a little treatise there on the origins of the symbols. Benign or, deeply moving, profound, having nothing to do with the way they were distorted. But the fact is they were distorted. The message now is one to many, many black people and many others who identify or who feel similarly moved. They've become symbols of oppression, segregation, discrimination, inequality, and all the rest. I remember that the Nazi, wasn't it Sanskrit or something? One man's benign symbol is another man's, terror. Here's Lee in Harlem. Hi, Lee.
Hello, Geraldo.
So what's on your mind?
Here's the deal. Those who claim that the battle flag is a symbol of legacy and pride are disingenuous at best intellectually dishonest at the worst. That flag was not flown over the South Carolina State House until the 1960s, I believe it was 1961, in defiance of the Civil Rights Movement. You mean they didn't have pride in their history until 1961, between the end of the Civil War and the Civil War?
Right, Lee, hold on, Lee. You don't go away. Crash, do me a favor. Punch in Jane from New Jersey. I think Jane may have a different point of view. Now, Jane, you tell me your point of view, and I'd like you and Lee to have a conversation. Jane, what's your point of view about that flag?
Okay, you're going to make me really nervous with this. But,
oh, don't be nervous. Don't
okay.
be nervous.
I have some.
Everybody
experience.
Is welcome here.
Thank you. And hi, Lee. I've never lived in the South, but I have some experience with the South and people who lived in the South. I live in the North. I live in Monmouth County, New Jersey. I have some friends who are from the Deep South. My sister lived in Mississippi for 20 years. I can tell you that both black and white in the South look at Northerners as Yankees. They still call us Yankees. It unites black and white Southerners like you wouldn't believe, because they scoff at the Northerners. We're the Yankees who don't know anything, and I think that's what a lot of the people... There are many different views about the flag and what it means, but I think to many people down there, it's a sign of independence from the North and the Northern ideas and just being told what to do by the government of the North. And so many people down there still look at us as the Northern Yankees and sneer at us. So.
Okay, Jane, that sounded reasonable to me. Lee, I'd like you to respond to Jane.
Well, I mean, that flag was not raised until 1960. I mean, you mean they felt differently between 1860s and 1961? I mean, so they didn't decide.
So you think the argument of Southern exceptionalism is lame and ex post facto in a sense?
Disingenuous at best. I mean, when you talk about legacy and
pride. All right, let me ask Jane, who is certainly not in any way, shape, or form a racist. Jane, what about the... Okay, hold on, hold on.
I am
hold on,
white,
Lee.
But I almost married a black man. He was the love of my life.
Okay, now, what about the fact, Jane, that it hurts people's feelings?
Well, I think that's the thing. Here's the thing, Geraldo. As I'm listening to all this, I don't have a side, and I'm not recommending what to do about it, because there are people far more impassioned about it than I am. But as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, but you know what? That's America. You're allowed to think what you want to think and say what you want to think, say what you want to say, and little by little... We're kind of like correcting all of that. And you know what? That's who we are. It's like we're kind of taking away what makes us such a unique country. And, you know, I was in a relationship with a black man for 5 years. I had some very horrible things said about me by both blacks and whites. He warned me that his community would not be so welcoming. And we went to social things together. And, you know, it cuts on both sides. But the thing is, they had a right to think what they wanted to think and say what they wanted to say. I was with him. It didn't hurt me. I have black friends. I'm not a bigot. I'm not a racist. No one in my circle is. I think we're kind of getting a little out of control with this politically correct stuff and letting stuff, you know, get to us. We have to develop a thicker skin, I think, really.
Oh, stop with that. Come on. I mean, that's please. I mean, we have to have this debate, I mean, about something that's that obvious. Hello?
I'm here. You're here. You're on the air.
We have to debate about something that obvious. I mean, to hear on the right, to hear conservatives say this was not a racial attack, it was an attack on Christianity.
Lee, I'm not a conservative, okay? I've been an independent thinker since I was a child. So don't speak for me or other people. I really resent groups speaking for everybody, both black and white. We're a nation of independent people.
I bet you two would get along. I mean, really. I don't want to make you
an opinion. And you know what? I don't want to make this a black or white thing. You know, if people hate me because I'm white, so what? If people hate me because I'm black, so what? It's like no one has a right to harm anybody else. Nobody has a right to physically hurt someone, to make their lives miserable, you know, to burn their houses down. That's my concern. You have a right to think what you want and say what you want. It's not going to hurt me.
I'll give you 15 seconds, Lee, and then I got to go. Jane, thanks.
Okay.
Stop with the... I mean, those are platitudes. I mean, we have to have this argument about something as obvious as this. I mean, for conservatives to say this was not a racial attack, was an attack on Christianity, are you kidding me?
This was a racist terrorist attack. There's no doubt about it.
500 feet in South Carolina. He'd drive that far...
Come on, if he wanted to attack Christianity, he could go around.
We know. Well, I'm not. You're not debating. You're debating against yourself now, Lee. But we're with you on that. Okay. Thank you very much for the call. Okay. I've got to take a break. Let me take a quick intermission. We'll come back here at 77 WABC.
77 WABC.
Almost 5 minutes to noon. David, John, Will, Jim, and Stephen, I'm not going to have time to take your call. Stephen, I especially hope that you can call back tomorrow. We'll continue this discussion. Right now, I have a special guest. Stephen Santino is the first vice president of the People's United Bank. He is a wonderful man who has helped Life's Work put together this magnificent outing here at the Edgewood Country Club. We are totally sold out, right, Vicky? We totally sold out. So, Stephen, from People's United Bank, first vice president, why get involved in this particular charity, Stephen?
Well, you know, Geraldo, meeting Vicky Schneps and then you at the opening of the Family Center for Autism, it's just a great organization, and the work they're doing in the community to really help those that have developmental disabilities and you know, need someone to help. The organization does wonderful work.
And what about this triumphant turnout here at the event today? You must have worked pretty hard to make this thing happen.
Well, it's great to have so many people here today, including my colleagues at People's United Bank. And you know, we're very much a supporter of our communities. And it's a beautiful day, and I think everyone's going to have a great day on the course.
So did you ever think when you became a banker that you'd be doing this kind of stuff?
You know, not initially, but, you know, the community has always been a part of who I am, and it's a great part of who the organization is. And, you know, just being here today and talking with you again, as we did at the opening, it's just, a great day.
Do you ever reflect, I mean, look at all the things we're talking about in this country. A lot of things trouble us as a nation. You ever think we're going to get our way through, we'll muddle through?
You know what? We have a lot of work ahead of us, and unfortunately there's still prejudice in this country, and it's a shame to see, you know, that there's just so much hatred and there's just so much violence as a result of it.
So you are based at Huntington. Is that where you live?
Yes, I live on Long Island in Huntington. I've been there for about 3 years, and, it's a great community, and, enjoy being here today, supporting a great organization and Life's Work.
Edgewood Country Club, we thank everyone here, Leslie Slender, to everyone at Vicky Schneps, thank you, at the group. Made a ton of money. How much did we make? Any idea?
I'm still counting the money from Celebrity Apprentice, she says.
Over 150 grand from the golf outing to go on top of the 750 from Celebrity Apprentice. We're doing okay. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow we'll continue the discussion. Obviously, I believe that this race issue is going to mark our summer. Stephen, thank you, and thank the people of People's United Bank. Now let's play some golf! Go!
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.